Aaron, one of the pastors here, and we are starting a new conversation here at Church Without Walls in the green growing season. I love this image. Thanks be to Dee, who the art of celebration, finding God at church. And so this will be like a three-week conversation. Really what it does is it comes out of a time to reflect on what we've been doing as we gather together to worship. We've been calling this the celebration remodel. And about a month ago, I asked folks what they thought, which is always fun as a pastor to say, like, what do you think of changes we've made? And I really appreciate the way, like, this particular community cares so much about how we do things. And, like, that was a monster of a survey. It was like an essay. And I said at the beginning, like, you don't have to fill it all out. But people are like, come on, this is long. I'm like, you don't have to fill it out. But I was actually really encouraged to go through and to hear just how much people are invested in this community and all the different ways that people want to hear from God and are just hungry. I mean, if you're newer to this community, let me tell you, this is a church, this is a deep spiritual place. This is not a shallow place. This is a place where people are hungry to go deep in a genuinely spiritual way. And so, so I think it's important every once in a while to take a step back and say, this is the next slide here, to say, what in the world are we doing, actually? It's actually part of the way that God moves in our lives, where we receive the word of God, we hear what God would want for us, we respond to it in some kind of concrete way, right? You do it, you live it out the word, but then you also reflect on it. You take some time to say, like, whoa, what just happened? So that's what we're about to do. Just for the next 3 weeks, we're going to stop and say, like, whoa, what just happened? You learn by doing, and we've been doing some new stuff. If you're newer around here, our room didn't used to look like this. We didn't used to risk life and property by putting stones on every chair. You know, we're trying some new stuff, and we feel like there's been some growth and some learning. There's been some good things we love. There's been some things that are harder. And so it's good as a community to stop and say, like, hey, what's going on? So that'll just be 3 quick weeks, and it's a little bit similar to if you were around last year. We looked at, like, the different elements of our life groups. We meet actually in people's houses because this is a church without walls after all. And so so this year we'll be looking at this particular space, this space of celebration, and how do we celebrate in a deep, soulful, joyful way together. And so then just so you know what's happening, after that, we'll begin to have a 9-week conversation on race, which will be powerful and challenging, and I think God will be really in that. So that'll take us all the way up to Easter, which is really the Church Without Walls high point of the year. If you haven't been to Easter at Church Without Walls, you have not yet lived. I have to say, it's going to be good. So there's a lot of good stuff, I think, coming up. So I'd like to begin our conversation about the art of celebration with a little story, which I think will help us understand our passage. So when I was between degrees at one point, I really needed money. And so I took a job as an apprentice electrician. I was terrible at this job. In fact, when I was done, my coworker, who was kind of a lifer in this field, I said, yeah, I'm going to go back to school. He said, yeah, I knew you wouldn't last. Like, thanks. What I did for my job that I wasn't very good at is I would go to, like, new housing developments, and I would just put in GFI plugs. I don't know if you know what those are, but I didn't until I took this job. And then I put in, like, 1,200 of them over the... I don't know how many I did, but I just did these GFI plugs. And I was always, like, they'd drop me off at a site, and they'd come back, and they'd say, like, why aren't you done yet? And I'd be like, because I'm slow. Why is that one upside down? Well, it's kind of, you know... So I gradually got a little bit better, but it was really hard. And I didn't enjoy it, and I hated it. And I didn't even make that much money, so it was a terrible job. But what was interesting about this particular job is that for years afterwards, when I would go into houses, I would be like, GFI plug. And I'd be like, that's not installed properly, you know? And it's not like I went around, I didn't consciously think about it. It's like, and those GFI plugs were probably around just in the same way. But all of a sudden, my reality was, like, full of GFI plugs. And I didn't even try to think about that, right? I didn't even, it's not like I intentionally looked for it. I would just notice it. It would just appear, right? So what I'd like you to do right now, it's an example. I'd like you to turn to two or three people around you. And if you do you have a story like that? Do you have some story of all of a sudden you notice something that you never noticed before because of something you did? Ask each other if you have a story like that and take 30 seconds, quickly share some stories. Okay, 20 seconds. These have to be quick stories. Okay, thank you for playing our little game today. Just to fill out these, I'm wondering if there are any quick stories of, like, just really quick illustrations of this phenomenon of all of a sudden seeing something that has always been there, but now you can see it. Anybody? Just to fill in this common experience that many of us have had.
Shirts improperly folded at department store.
I take it you're a folder. There you go. That's an excellent example. Okay, there's one. Let's have one more. Anybody else?
Free libraries.
Oh, right.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah, I think. Although, aren't they objectively growing, too? There are, like, probably more of them than there were. Like, it's a growing phenomenon.
I don't know.
Because you wouldn't have noticed.
I have no new ones since I put mine in my
There you go. This also happens, like, say when you buy a car. Like, I always buy used cars, right? And so the last used car I bought was a Scion XA, which is a little smashed car that looks like a bean. It's kind of like an entry-level Mini Cooper, you know? But so they're really funny looking, and I've never noticed them at all. But when you're looking for it on Craigslist, all of a sudden they're freaking everywhere. You know, you ever had that experience? They're all over the place. So what I would say as we start thinking about this topic is just that the whole phrase "no filter," that's not true. We have millions of filters, right? Because there's so much going on around us all the time that we could never notice. We could never pay attention to it, to everything. So we have our filters that subconsciously, selectively figure out what we're going to notice and pay attention to, and that's before you even consciously think about it. But there are ways, obviously, that our filters can change, and all of a sudden you see things that you never saw before. All right, so I think that is what's going on in this passage here. What I'd like to do is quickly walk you through some key points in the passage and explain some words, and then we'll put it all together and it'll make sense. So you're gonna have to be patient with me for about 5 minutes, but I promise you it'll be worth it. Okay, what are some things to notice about this passage? Because Paul is the author of this passage. Paul is notoriously dense and subtle, but then really powerful if you get what he's saying. By the way, this is a translation from one of our beloved New Testament scholars, N.T. Wright. It's not how I originally memorized these verses, but I've loved this passage for a long time, so I'm really excited to share it with you tonight. The first thing to notice is the communal focus that's there. He calls his readers, and he calls us a dear family. Really important to read this passage, not in the context of just you and Jesus on your own, but it's a dear family he's talking to. And even in the verses that follow, he begins talking about, like, oh, how does this family use its gifts in worship when you get together? That's what this is talking about. And then the verses after that are all about, like, how do you actually get along with each other day to day? Like, how do you put up with it, bear with one another in love, and all kinds of stuff like that. Don't be stuck up. All kinds of great stuff. This whole passage that we're looking at is highly communal. That's step number one. Now, I think the high point of this passage is there's a little word there, the word mind, and we're going to see it in verse 2 when we get to that as well. I think the sense of our mind is the heart of this passage. And so the word, at least in verse 2, the word is nous, N-O-U-S. I guess I'm saying it French style, but sorry to all you New Testament scholars out there. But N-O-U-S, this word that means mind, but it doesn't mean just your intellect, just your rational mind only. In fact, the Greek Orthodox, who are obviously Greek, they translate this word as the eye of the soul, right? And there's all this complicated stuff in Paul and other stuff in the New Testament. There's like body, soul, and spirit, and flesh, and all this, you know, all these terms, like what makes us up as human beings, our heart and our mind, how does it all fit together? But this particular idea is about, it's about the eye of the soul, right? It's how your soul sees things and connects to things, right? So when you hear the word mind, it's not just what you consciously, cognitively process. It's not the kind of thing that gets you a good score on the GRE, right? It's much broader than that. It's like the eye of the soul. So when we get to that, remember that that's really what mind means. Finally, look at words there like it talks about living sacrifice. And then the beginning of the last sentence there is worship. What we're actually talking about when we get together as a family and as our minds are affected, it talks about our minds being brought into line with God. Later on, it talks about our minds being transformed. How does that happen? It's actually linked to this idea of liturgy, what Pastor Rena talked about earlier. It's like the work of the people. When we come together, we worship, we hear the word, there's something that actually affects our minds. It's really, really powerful. And the other interesting thing that we see here is that the mind actually follows the body. You see how it tells us there? Like Paul's main appeal to this group of people is about their bodies. He says, I want you to offer your body. Do something with your body, and it will really affect your mind. And I think that's the way things work. And here's a quote which really kind of expresses this this really well. It is easier to act yourself into a new way of thinking than it is to think yourself into a new way of acting. Right? What comes first? There's so many times when it's a little bit like the putting in the plugs lets you see the world differently. And I think that's what this passage is getting at here too. As we offer our bodies in a certain way, it renews our mind in a certain way. It's subtle, but that's really important. And we'll come back to why that's important in a second. So let's go to verse 2 here. Another word I want to point out, or another concept, is in that last sentence it talks about we should be transformed by the renewing of your minds. That's just one little word, but it's really important because I feel like our minds are constantly degrading. That's the idea of, it's a little bit like a library book. I don't know about you, but I'm haunted by library book renewals because I get my books from several libraries, and they're always coming up due at different times. And, you know, if you ever get books from the Berkeley Library, you can get them through Link Plus. Have you ever tried this? You can get books from all over the place. But if you lose it, it's $175. And it's $1 a day late fee. So you have to be obsessive about, like, renewing them at the right time, right? And your mind, apparently, according to the scripture, is that there's something about that, too. This eye of the soul, it needs to be renewed all the time, right? It's not just static and then it's fine. Okay. Final thing, and part of the reason why is because of this phrase before where it says, what's more, don't let yourselves be squeezed into shape by the things that are negative in this age, in this present, the context around us. There are ways that if you just act normal, then you will be shaped by what's around you. What this is saying is there's always a transformation of your mind that's happening all the time. It's just what's going to transform it. It could be your bad job between degrees. It could be the car you're looking for, whatever it is. I think a really interesting example of this is of the icon. Again, they're kind of having a Greek Orthodox theme today because for the Orthodox, they saw an icon like this as almost like a window into heaven, right? And for them, it wasn't about a cognitive thing. It's like, let me think about this intellectually. But it was just a matter of like being before this icon, and it would mediate the presence of Christ to folks who would connect with Jesus in that way. It was a way that you put your body, you put your eyes before this icon, and it would influence the eye of your soul. Right, so that your physical eyes are linked to your very mind itself. But see, it's not just a religious thing, because I think about how much of our lives now are passed not in front of icons like this, but in front of icons like this, right? Here we are. I don't know if you've ever, or have you recently gone on some kind of retreat or spent some time where there are just no screens, right? We have some like middle school retreats where there's like no phones allowed. And you see the kids like all over in corners like convulsing and kind of like, oh, no, what do? I can't talk to anybody. I don't know how to talk to a human being. But I think it's true of all ages, right? Screens have become so normal to us. We put our bodies in front of screens all the time. And that shapes us in interesting ways. We don't have time to talk about that, but just begin to think about what that can mean. Like, I spend a lot of my time, you know, for my job, as you do it too probably, in front of a screen. And I know it's not good to sit for too long, so sometimes I stand, and I can't afford a standing desk yet. But sometimes I actually, instead of sitting just to mix it up, I like kneel in front of the screen. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I am kneeling in front of the screen. I am like worshiping. This is like bad, so I'm going to stop doing that somehow. But it's kind of symbolic, right? That even the amount of, the present age that we live in is an age of these icons. We've gone from these icons to these icons. And there are some really good things about this. It's not saying that it's all negative. But what it is saying is let's be aware of how these things are shaping us. And let's worship together in order to renew our mind. Does that make sense? And the whole point of all this is to go back to the whole scriptures here now, is that we would know God's very good will for us, the very last sentence you see there. And this is very striking, because certainly in the Greco-Roman world, everyone just assumed that we were ruled by the fates, right? And if you know of any Greek if you've read any Greek tragedies or seen those plays, like those fates were cruel, right? There was not, the fates' will was not good, acceptable, and complete. It was tragic and sad, and it was only nice to watch when it was somebody else and it was like in the amphitheater. And currently, I think we have the same kind of thing. We have sort of evolutionary chance. That's what most people assume their lives are ruled by, this sort of evolutionary chance. But here's a picture of a life that's actually shaped by God's will, that there's a reason that we are existing. And there's something that's good, acceptable, and complete that can undergird and shape our very lives. And that's the picture, I think, that's so compelling and exciting about this. All right, you've made it through the hard part. So let me read this to you again as we've unpacked all that, and let's see what it means. So, my dear family, Paul says, this is my appeal to you by the mercies of God, to offer your bodies in community with the rest of the family as a living sacrifice, right? So like this is using images of like the temple, and you'd bring you'd bring some animal or some grain, but instead you bring yourself. And it's not so God can like kill you, obviously, but it's holy and pleasing to God. And it's actually so that when you worship like this, it brings your mind into line with God's. You're connecting with God's very self. So meeting like this is really deep. He continues because there's more. He says, what's more, don't let yourselves be squeezed into the shape dictated by this present age. He's saying this is the status quo. If you do nothing, the squeezing happens. You kneel before the screen. But instead, if you're proactive, you are transformed by the renewing of your minds so that you can work out. You can figure out what God's will is, that which is good, acceptable, and perfect. So what we are doing here tonight, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, so to speak, unless we see it with the eye of the soul. Because what we do when we gather like this as the people of God for liturgy, to do the work of the people together, it says a lot actually about how we hope that transformation happens. Right? These are very like abstract terms. Like the eye of your soul is renewed. Like what does that mean? How our minds are brought into line with God's. Like what does that mean? And what do we hope for in particular when we show up, you know, night after night, when we go to our life groups? What kind of transformation are we hoping to happen? And so let me jolt us out of what seems normal by giving you just some other examples of followers of Jesus and what they hope for when they gather together. And of course, as you might expect, we're going to begin with the Orthodox. So here you go. I would say that every worship practice, it has like values and beliefs baked into it, right? It's like one of the, it's like when you spike the eggnog that's got stuff in it, right? If you have a brownie that's got stuff baked in, you're like, whoa, you're gonna get, you think you're eating a brownie, but you're getting a different experience. And worship practices are like that. Yes, I did say that worship is like cannabis, because as you engage in the practice, the theology or the spirituality, it actually comes with it and it enters in, sometimes even if you don't know it, right? If you eat something, if you eat a brownie that's laced, you don't even know, you didn't consciously agree to do that, but somehow it got into your bloodstream and it affects you. And worship and liturgy is the same. And so you're not going to forget that. I won't either. I didn't, yeah. So what the Orthodox are really hoping for when they gather together is they're really looking for windows to heaven. For them, they're not so much about preaching doctrinal truth, although they certainly have a lot of that. They're actually about the beauty and mystery of God. So when they gather, obviously their sacred space is really important. And this is in Russia right now. And so you see everything, the smells and the sights are supposed to evoke like heaven itself. It's almost like when they come together and their liturgy is actually like heaven come down to earth. That's the kind of transformation of the eye of their soul that they're looking for. It's so interesting, like we see the next slide. They do communion just like we did earlier. But for them, they have what's called an iconostasis. And so this is a whole, wall almost filled with icons like this. And it actually walls off the communion elements, the presence of Christ in the communion elements. And so behind that iconostasis, only the priest can go. It says a lot, again, it's like there's a lot of theology baked into that, right? This is an aesthetic, this is a hierarchical kind of approach to things. Only the priest can go back there. It's not like us, you know, ours is right in front. It's a very strike. This is how they hope that the eyes of their souls are renewed through the liturgy that they do. And now for something completely different. This is a meeting of the Quakers in Philadelphia in the 19th century. What do you notice about the way they gather to do the liturgy? They are gender separated, which is very common throughout the world. That's right. There's like nothing, right? There's no visual representation of anything. That's right. Where is this? There certainly is no iconostasis, right? Where is the center? Yeah. So there's a strong belief in simplicity. Let's go to the next slide. We can see what a contemporary Quaker meeting looks like, also in Philadelphia. The values when you go to a Quaker meeting, I don't know if you've ever been to one, but what happens is there's no talk like this. There's no set worship like we just experienced and we'll experience in a second. What there is that everybody just sits in a room and is silent and waits for the spirit to like grab somebody. And then somebody speaks up. And you hope they've gotten it right and they're paying attention to the spirit. Otherwise, they go on at length about something. But there's this interesting and really deep belief that the Holy Spirit, the Word of God, will embody the people themselves, right? Again, so much spirituality baked into this. And it's so striking that, at least among white folks, the Quakers were the first ones in the United States to stand up and say race-based slavery is wrong. And that came out of meetings like this, where they sat quietly with no images, listened to the voice of the Spirit, and what emerged out of that is like, we got to change this. Very striking. Their minds were renewed through the liturgy that they did. A final example, I think just to give us some contrast for what our experience is like compared to followers of Jesus all around the world. This is Bishop Nyasha of Zimbabwe. And during my graduate work, I studied him and I feel like I know these folks pretty well, so I brought them up a few times. What's striking about their liturgy to me is, you can go to the next slide, that when you go to church in Zimbabwe with the Zion church here, you don't just kind of show up and find a seat. Instead, what you do is you go to the river, which they call the Jordan, right? It's that named after the river in the Old Testament, where where, you know, Israel crossed over and they became the chosen people of God when they crossed Jordan. Well, every week in Bishop Naosha's church, you cross the Jordan. And to cross into the Jordan, to cross into the promised land, to cross into the holy chosen people of God, you actually have to go through this cleansing experience. It's almost like baptism every week, where there's a prayer for spiritual healing. For whatever people are bringing that week, they receive God's healing through this, through the water, through reenacting the baptism. We can go to the next one. You can see it's a black and white picture, but you can see how communal it is, that to cross over into worship, you receive the healing of God. There's a place where you confess your sins in public in front of everyone. So there's no sort of private space at all. You're going to come, and even before you get into the service, you're going to get healed. You're going to get bad stuff cast out. You're going to get stuff worked out. That is the way that Bishop Naosha's church hopes to have their minds renewed. And go to the next slide. So for us, the question I have for you, and this is something I'd just like you to think about briefly by yourself, not in any group. When you come to Church Without Walls, even if it's your first time, maybe you came here tonight and you just thought you'd check out this new church. Maybe you've been coming here for 15 years. What kind of renewing of the eye of your soul do you hope for? Is it something like the Orthodox? Is it something like the Quakers? Is it something like Bishop Naosha's church? What do you desire? What do you long for in a place like this, in a gathering like this? There's many places you could be right now, but you came here tonight. Maybe you came just because you always come, and maybe you haven't thought about this for a while, so it's a good thing. Maybe there's some uncovering of desire for us to do together tonight. What kind of renewing of the eye of your soul do you hope for when you gather together with the people of God? And that's actually what we're going to be talking about for the next 2 weeks. When we focus, we'll have a couple different panels come up and talk about how we want to see God with the eyes of our soul through worship, through hearing the word. I think it'll be really good. As I close tonight, I just want to say that the core, I think, hope that maybe undergirds all the different diverse hopes that we might have written down, the core thing that we want to do is just simply to see God. And this is what brings us back to those stories we shared at the beginning. Because God is everywhere. We believe that as followers of Jesus, right? We believe that God is already actually out there. But a lot of times we can go a long time without a God sighting. But he's already there. God is already present. And so part of the point of a worship experience like this, part of the point of doing the work of the people, the liturgy, is it awakens the eyes of our soul. And it gives us a better chance of actually seeing God where God is already present in our daily life. This is an investment in God sightings. That's why we come to places like this. And I have to say, I have to be really honest. You might know this. If you go to church, you definitely know this. When you come to invest and do the work of the people in worship, it is not always an amazing experience in the moment. Sometimes it is boring. Sometimes it's a miss. Sometimes it's too long. Sometimes that was off key. Not when Michael's leading, but, you know, if I were leading, for example. Sometimes, you know, whatever. Sometimes the sermon is boring. Sometimes it's interesting, but you can't remember what the point is because it was all talk about cannabis. Who knows, right? But what it actually is, whether it's it could be an intense moment where you meet God right there, but all the more often, what it is just that you have brought your body here and the eye of your soul has been formed a little bit by being here. And so it comes out during the week and over time. This is not a sort of one-to-one, but over time as you do the work of the people, as we faithfully come together, it just works. It worked for me with GFI plugs and I hated that stuff. It's gonna work by coming together and doing the liturgy. God is building something among us. The reason we did the stones earlier is because God actually says, this is a very small one, God actually says that we are like living stones. And the family of God is just like a bunch of stones that God is building together into an altar where God's presence actually is. And so as we come tonight, whether you had a great time, whether you were bored or interested or excited, I think you made a great decision by bringing your body here tonight, by presenting your body as a living sacrifice. I believe that because of that, you will see God in some new ways. Maybe they'll be spectacular, maybe they won't. Maybe it'll be right away, maybe it'll take time. But as we build, we see those things. We begin to notice God everywhere and all the time. And that's the last exhortation I want to leave you with. Paul appeals to the church in Romans. I want to appeal to this body here to keep making this good decision to gather together and do the liturgy. Because just like, you know, after I stopped doing this job, I stopped seeing the GFI plugs. The same thing can happen. When we stop doing the liturgy, there's a way in which we just don't see God as much. And so as we come, as we invest, God transforms the very eye of our soul, and we find ourselves with the possibility of being in step with the Spirit in a brand new way. And that is really, really something to celebrate. So good job. I'm so glad that we're all here together today. We've done it. We have presented our bodies as living sacrifices. And so let's continue to do that now as we do the work of the people, as we celebrate, as we experience the joy of transformation that God has for us.